Okay, so let's try to finish the topic of the early Kriya Shema and look at the rest of the Mishnah. It's a somewhat of a complex issue, so let's try to very quickly recap the key points that we need to understand and then to try to wrap this point up. So we've been talking about the question, there's a debate between Rashi and Tosis about how one deals with the fact that the shuls daven too early at night, especially in their time and in our time as well. And how do we deal with the fact that Mishnah seems to tell us that Kriya Shema starts at Seis HaKolchavim? And if we're davening before that, so how does that match? So that was a matter of debate, and we pointed out a couple of interesting things about the debate, that Rashi and Tosis, first of all, are not really arguing in practice, because they both agree the same thing is done. The question is what plays what role. And also, Tosfos, when it argues with Rashi, the main premise of the debate, which is really whether or not it's possible to be Yotzei when we daven early, that's not really discussed. They're not really arguing about the substance of their debate. That's kind of between the lines. And they're mostly arguing about the backup plan. That since Rashi says that what we do is, we'll discuss in a second, that if we rely on Kriya Shema Hamitza, Tosfos doesn't find that to be a viable approach. They spend the time arguing on that, apparently assuming that this is what was done, that there was only two Kriya Shemas happening, the early Kriya Shema in Shul and Kriya Shema Al Hamitza. And since that was the case, it must be Klal Yisrael is doing the right thing. We have to figure out exactly how and how to assign those parts, and then neither of them were assuming that there is a third option, which is actually what we do, of simply saying an extra Kriya Shema in between the two in those days when we daven early. So essentially, again, Rashi's position was that the Kriya Shema in Shul is not effective, it's too early. We only do it in order to be mamid tefillah mitoch divrei Torah, basically to serve the role of Ashrei, that there shouldn't go straight into Shon Ashrei, but we should have some context. And we discussed what was interesting about that, about the fact that he doesn't use the more obvious answer of smichus kul tefillah. We talked a little bit about the implications of that. So since that Kriya Shema doesn't work, so what does work? So says Rashi, Kriya Shema lamita, which is the first parsha, and Tosfos attacks him on that plan, says it can't be those that first parsha, that Kriya Shema Lamita is not effective. That's one of the four reasons why it's not effective, because it's only the first parsha. Also, there are no brachas recited. Also, there's no smichus gul l'tfila, because smichus gul l'tfila, in addition to meaning that there should be a connection between gul l'tfila, at least means that there should be a structure of ma'ariv that is shema before Shmona Esrei. And according to Rashi, that plan is inverted. It is Shmona Esrei first when you daven early, and then Shema afterwards, which was an opinion in the Gemara that it should always be that way, and we don't follow that opinion, so Rashi is basically undoing the accepted halacha. And then the fourth question was that Kriya Shema Lamita is for the purposes of protecting oneself from the damaging forces, from the mazikin, and the Talmud says that a Talmud Chacham doesn't have to do it because he's presumably learning something at that time anyway, so therefore that's Tosfos' fourth question, apparently worried about the fact that people aren't going to do it, people aren't going to say it, not everyone necessarily says it, and it's interesting why exactly that's the question. There is an approach.
In other words, Tosfos is saying everybody goes to Daf Yomi at night, so they don't have to.
Right, the Gemara says.
Well, they might not get to say Kriya Shema.
Right, the Gemara said everyone. The Gemara said that Talmud Chacham was learning at night, not just Daf Yomi, but the Psukim that the Gemara quotes in Daf Yomi, so that's going to pater him from Kriya Shema Lamita. So it seems like Tosfos' question, which is not 100% clear, it seems like his question is that there's a percentage of the population that's not saying this Kriya Shema Lamita. So how are they in fulfillment? We mentioned the approach of Rav Kook and others, that apparently there's a machlokas here, that maybe Rashi holds that for all the Drabbanans, the Meirv time is enough. Meirv is sufficient to fulfill anything that is a Chiyav Drabbanan here. And they were only concerned, he was only concerned about what's a Mitzvah in HaTorah. So apparently, since Rashi's view is that the first paragraph is the fulfillment of the Mitzvah in HaTorah, that's all he's worried about you doing after dark. Not the other paragraphs, not the brachos, etc., etc. So therefore, that's all he focuses on with Kriya Shema Al Hamita. We mentioned there are different practices in terms of the brachos, in terms of whether you say the brachos early or not, whether you repeat all the brachos later. It's interesting, just saw last night, because there's a whole discussion about what is the proper time to end the Tainus like Shabbos of the Thomas. So last night I was looking at a sefer that discussed this, and mentioned the tension about whether one should be machmir to wait for the latest possible time, even with the Tainus Drabanan, like Shavos of the Tammuz, or do you deal with the fact that since it is Drabanan, that maybe there's a pressure to end it earlier for those who find it hard to fast? Shouldn't the seaboard shouldn't necessarily compel them to wait the latest possible time? So the Sefer I was looking at mentioned a context in where the Chazon Ish was present and where they davened early because they wanted to officially end the Tainus, and it mentioned that the Chazon Ish only joined them for Shmona Esrei and said Shema the Brachos later. So it's just a connection to Yonah Dioma. Again, I think the more common practice is to daven the full Ma'ariv early and just to recite the three paragraphs of Shema later, but as you mentioned, there is some debate about that. So then the question was that if this is if the view of Rashi is not accepted, so what does Tosus argue should be the alternative? So Tosus says that the alternative is that we are Yotze with Kriyat Shema and Shul. And then the question was, how does that work? It seems to be against the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Seisak Ochavim, and again doesn't really say it out loud. It gives you a clue, which the Gemara figures out is Seisak Ochavim, but essentially conveys the information that it's Seisak Ochavim. So how do we get around that? By davening early. So the Tosus has two answers. One is the Ri's answer, that we follow these opinions the Gemara is going to quote, that actually pegs the time a little bit earlier. Again, in practice, it's difficult to imagine that when we schedule Ma'ariv and Shul, it happens to match up with these sort of hard to figure out what they mean times, but that's the first approach. The other approach garners more discussion. It's the approach of Rabbeinu Tam, and that's really what we were up to try to explain a little bit more, that Rabbeinu Tam's approach is that this correlates to a discussion in the fourth parak. And in the fourth parak, the Gemara tells us there's a debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim about when Mincha can be recited. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it goes up till Plag HaMincha, it's a halachic hour and a quarter before dark, which is significant for many purposes. For example, that's the earliest time we could bring in Shabbos on Friday afternoon, Plag HaMincha on. And according to Chachamim, it goes up until dark. So the Gemara concludes in a very unusual way as to what the practice is. Says the Gemara, Hash lo idma halachos lo kamar velo kamar, since the halacha is not established like one opinion or the other, what's the rule? David kamar avid, David kamar avid. A very unusual type of approach. Do what you think is best. Follow this opinion, it works. You follow that opinion, it also works. So the remaining Tam holds, okay, so you see the Talmud gives us license to follow either view. So that's what's going on here as well, that those who say Shema early, they're following the view of Rabbi Yehuda, that Plag HaMincha is the cutoff time, and those who daven Mincha up until dark, they're following the view of Rabbi Yehuda, following the Chachamim, that Mincha, that dark is the cutoff time. And you have the right to follow either opinion. So there are a number of controversial and debatable points about this view of Rabbeinu Tam, and that's one of the things we want to finish off today. Then on the one hand, we mentioned, which you alluded to, that there's two major jumps being made here, because the Gemara is talking about Mincha, and Tosus is talking about Kriya Shema Shel Ma'ariv. So to assume, first of all, that Ma'ariv is defined by Mincha, there's no obvious reason why that should be. Why do we assume that just because Mincha time is over, Ma'ariv time begins? Maybe there's a no man's zone in between. Maybe Mincha ends at Plag and Ma'ariv starts an hour later. So just because the Talmud tells us that Yehuda's view is that Mincha can be recited until Plag, how do we know from there that Ma'ariv starts right away? And second of all, even if we do know that, even if we can assume that there's some clear relationship between the two, one stops and one starts, who says that Kriya Shema is connected to that? Our whole premise of our whole discussion is that they're not automatically connected. That you can daven Ma'ariv early and it's still not as man for Kriya Shema. So the Tam is basically avoiding the whole question and making an assumption that doesn't really seem to be proven. So as we mentioned, that's a very complicated discussion that Shuvah's Beis Halevi and Siman Tes to try to address that issue, why he assumes there's a relationship between the two. But what we focused on was another detail, is that also the Shagas Aryeh attached to Rabbeinu Tam, because the Shagas Aryeh says Rabbeinu Tam must be assuming that Kriya Shema is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Why is he assuming that? Because says the Shagas Aryeh, what gives him the right to employ this rule of paskin like you want. The Gemara says in Shach Sagan, we'll discuss if this is the only way to read it. The Gemara tells us that because it's talking about tefillah, it's talking about mincha and ma'ariv, or at least mincha, and assumption is talking about ma'ariv. So there, that tefillah is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Like the whole institution of mincha and ma'ariv, we assume is d'rabbanan. And this man, when you're going to say it, that's all d'rabbanan, according to everybody. Because according to most Rishonim, davening every day is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. The Rambam is the exception. The Rambam holds the mitzvah in our Torah to daven every day. But he agrees that with one tefillah a day, you're yotze. So once you've already had shacharis, even according to the Rambam, you've fulfilled your mitzvah in our Torah. So mincha, ma'ariv, obligation to begin with, according to everybody, is drabbanan. And certainly when you have to do it, these types of questions certainly be a drabbanan. So says the Shai Gesariah, yeah, so the Gemara is talking about that, that's fine. But if you're going to talk about Kriyashma is a mitzvah in our Torah. So how could you have the right to take a lenient, flexible approach for Kriyashma unless, says the Shai Gesariah, you're going to come to assuming Kriyashma is Drabbanan, which, as we said in our first discussion, is a minority view, both in the Gemara and among a handful of Rishonim, but the overwhelming consensus is not that way, so the Shai Gesariah says a bit of time has got to be wrong for that reason. So to consider that question, we then brought another question. The question of, let's go back to that passage in the fourth parak, when the Gemara says that you can paskin either way. So how much flexibility does that give us in real life? Can we paskin either way on a daily basis? So let's say today I want to daven early ma'ariv, I want to daven ma'ariv after pause. And tomorrow I'm going to be working late, I want to daven late mincha right before dark. Can I switch off between today and tomorrow? And if you say I can, so what about if I want to be even more blatant? What about today? I want to daven mincha after fog, following the view of Chachamim. And then right after that, I want to daven ma'ariv before dark, following the view of Rabbi Huda. Can I switch off myself within one day? So that was a question in general. And the Stipler, in his essay, in the very beginning of Maseches Brachos, introduces in this context a fascinating machlokas between the Rishonim as to how to look at this whole issue. And he notes that the Rosh gives us one model, and the Meiri gives us a different model as far as what we should compare this case to. This idea that you can follow either view of the halacha, so where do we find the precedent to this? Where do you find a similar idea in the Gemara? So according to the Rosh, it can be compared to a Gemara in Erevin, and Daf Av, and Daf Zayin, where the Gemara talks about the case of Shedra Vigol Goles. You have a skull and a spine of an animal, and you want to know what makes the spine deficient, what makes it considered to be missing something. There's a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai as to what the threshold is, how much does it have to be missing. So what's the kula and what's the chumra on this issue? If you say one vertebra, two vertebra, so if you give a higher threshold, it needs to be missing two in order to be chaser. So is that a kula or a chumra? It's both. Because if it's deficient, if it's chaser, so it's not metame, so that's a kula. But it is but it is a treifa. So if you have a higher, it's a chumra to say that it's metame with one, but it's a kula to say that it's in terms of treifa. So this switches back and forth in terms of treifas and in terms of tuma. So the Gemara says it has nafkaminas in either way. So you have the right to follow the view of Beis Shammai, says the Gemara. The halakha is real like Beis Hillel. But you have the right to follow the view of Beis Shammai.
Depending on your particular desire.
No, well, it's not clear what motivates you. That's part of what we want to figure out, actually. But the Gemara says, really, the halacha is like Beis Hillel, but you can also follow like Beis Shammai. But in terms of your desire, so to speak, so the Gemara says, if you mix and match, if you follow the kulas of both, that's not appropriate. The Gemara says, that's Rasha. And if you follow the chumras of both, you might think, well, that's okay. So the Gemara says, no, that's also inappropriate. That's foolishness. That makes no sense. So you follow either view. Ideally, you'll follow Beis Hillel. If you want, you can follow Beis Shammai, but you have to be consistent. You can't take the chumras of both or the kulas of both. That's the example the Rosh gives. The Meiri gives a different example. Meiri in the fourth parish gives the case the Mishnah talks about called Shnei Shvilin. The Mishnah in Taurus, which is quoted in the Gemara Masechta Daf Yud, let's say you have two paths, both lead to the same place, and we know that one path is Tameh and the other path is not. So Reuven comes to the rabbi and says, I took path A. What's my story? So the rabbi has the right to say, you're tar. Safek tuma b'rishos harabim is tar. If you don't know, it's a public space, I can be lenient. Then Shimon comes and says, I took path B. What's my story? So the rabbi has the right to say the same thing for him. Safek tuma b'rishos harabim is tar. Even though he knows they can't both be tar. Between the two of them, they cover the path of Tameh. He has the right to say that. Unless they come together, they take a race, and each one takes the other path, and they meet in the middle, and they come to the rabbi together, and they say, what's the story? So then, that's too blatant. The rabbi can't say they're both tar. Or exactly, he has to say some more of the discussion, but he can't say that they, he can't apply the contradiction when they're both looking in together. But he can rule in a contradictory way when they're not coming at the same time. So, says the Meiri, that's the relevant example. So the Stipler discusses, that basically some of the stuff we've laid out so far. So the Stipler essentially discusses, what's the difference between these two perspectives? Why does the Rush give the example he gives? And why does the Meiri give the example he gives? And if you think about it, they are really completely different examples. They're completely different cases. That in both cases, there's some type of flexibility in terms of the conclusion, but they reflect different motivations. The Gemara in Erevin about the spine of the animal, Beitzilin Beishamai, that's a question of Psak Halach.
That's the Rosh's example?
Yeah, that's the Rosh's example. That's a question of Psak Halach. But we don't know who's right. Is Beitzilin right or is Beishamai right? So the Gemara is saying, essentially we have a preference for the view of Beitzilin, but it's legitimate for those who follow Beishamai to follow Beishamai. That's also a halachic view that has credibility, as the Gemara says a little bit later in Erevin, referring to Beishamai Beishamai, Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. Both of these views are valid in the eyes of halacha. Both have real significance. Okay, so you could pick one view or the other, but you can't be inconsistent. You can't say, well, I'll follow the coolers of one, the coolers of the other. That doesn't make sense. That's not a psak. That's just mixing and matching parts. So you can follow one view or the other. That's legitimate in the realm of psak. The case in the Mishnah in Taurus are the two paths. That's not about psak. That's about suffix. The same letters switched around. The same three letters. But the rules of suffix, right, it's an easy way to remember. The suffix essentially, it's that when it comes to a situation where we don't know what the story is, sfeikus in general, so there is a certain rule of practice. So whether it's a din derabanan or a tumah, like in the case of the Mishnah, so the rule is, okay, we don't know if there's tumah here. So then you have a right to rule leniently. Then you have a right to act as if there is no tumah. It doesn't mean, it's not in general, there's a lot of lumdus here that won't go into in depth. When we talk about the rules of sfeikus, so it doesn't mean that because we take an approach, we take a stance, we think that's true. When it comes to suffix or abana makula, right, if you say you can act leniently in a situation of drabana, it doesn't mean that this is reflective of what the reality is. We don't know what the reality is. So we don't know what the reality is. So the halacha allows us to act leniently. And so too when it comes to suffix or isolatman. Again, we don't know what the reality is, so the halacha insists we have to be stringent because we're dealing with Torah law. But neither case is considered to be some type of clarification of what the facts are. So when it comes to the two people who come from different directions, different paths, so when I told the first guy that he's tar, it's not that, okay, this clarifies that that path is tar. It's that we don't know, so we have the right to say, okay, you're tar. And therefore, when the second guy comes, even though they can't both be tar, it doesn't matter. In both cases, I don't know what the story is. So we have the right to say, you're tar. That's essentially how a suffix works. So it can contradict itself, because when we told the first guy he's tar, we weren't saying the first path is tar. We're saying we don't know, therefore we can be lenient. And we're saying the second guy we don't know, therefore we can be lenient. So as the Stipler points out, this is two different ways of relating to the Gemara in Brachos about Mincha and Maariv. What does the Gemara mean when it says you can follow either view? You can follow Rabbi Yehuda or Chacham. According to the Rush, it means Now, you have a right to paskin like either opinion. The Yehuda's view is valid, and the Chachamim's view is valid. So you have a right to maintain either view. But presumably, once you pick a view, you should be consistent. You should follow it through. Shouldn't mix and match. Well, according to the Meiri, what's the operative principle? Apparently, it's because of Suffolk. Suffolk, the Rabbanon Lakula. So therefore, I can be lenient. The Suffolk seems to be who's right. Yeah, basically, the focus is a little bit different. It's not on the individual, but it's on the question of, yeah, what is true about halacha. Apparently, that's the Suffolk. We don't know when the, how the Zman of the day at that point falls out. We don't know what exactly is going on. We'll discuss on that base in the days. We'll talk a little bit about the general Suffolk, about the transition between night and day, but and we'll see if there are some rooms for different categories of Suffolk. Ben Hashmashos and Seis has both types of Suffolk, as we'll talk about hopefully soon, but yeah, something like that. So essentially, we don't know what's right. You have the right to follow either view. So this has at least two implications for our purposes. It's about Suffolk. It's about applying the rules of Suffolk. And according to the Rush, it's not about applying the rules of Suffolk, it's about the Psak that the Gemara is saying. This is an unresolved issue as far as who to follow, so pick someone and follow. We'll recommend Beis Hillel in the Gemara in Erevin. Beis Shammai is good too. In the Gemara in Brachas, we don't recommend either opinion. Pick one and follow it.
But that in itself is a chiddush, because we normally don't say, oh, we'll pass, we can pass.
It's very unusual, right? Either way, it's unusual. That's why we only have a handful of potential comparisons to talk about. Either way, it's an unusual type of model. We're starting off Shas here with an unusual type of model. It may give us the wrong impression about what the rest of Shas is going to be like, but it starts off with an unusual case. So those two possibilities affect us at least in two ways as far as what we're talking about here. One is, in terms of what the Stipler is talking about, the question of switching back and forth. We've seen that if one followed the Rush's view, then he probably is saying you should really pick a view. You should either follow Rabbi Yehuda or you should follow Chachamim. But essentially you believe one is right or the other one is right. The Halacha recognizes that there could be a pluralism of views on this point, but you should essentially believe one or the other and follow that.
According to the Rush is the Gemara in Erevin.
Right.
So, according to Gemara in Erevin, could you switch from day to day, or it would seem like you can't switch within a specific animal?
Right. It would sound like you shouldn't switch from case to case. When it says you can't take the kulas of both, the chumras of both, you could read it very narrowly as saying it only means within the same animal that you shouldn't say that it's both tar and kosher. But presumably, it means also from case to case that would also be too much. So to hear, it sounds like if you follow the Rush's comparison, then you really should be consistent. What about in the Meiri's view? In the Meiri's view, it's essentially saying is Suffolk the Rabbanon Lakula, and therefore I have the right to take the lenient view on when exactly this Zman Tefillah goes to. So then I have the right to follow Rabbi Yehuda, I have the right to follow Chachamim. And it would seem like, since it's basically I don't know, I can be Mako every day in either direction.
Well, can you say that on different days it's like when they come at different times?
It is, exactly. So that would seem to be
the same day when it comes from the same.
Right. So that's what it sounds like. So it sounds like exactly like that point. Then that's what the Stipler goes on to say, that to switch off from day to day, that is essentially like two people coming at different times, and therefore it should be legitimate. Each time it could be Mekel. But if they come on the same day, since we say you can't tell them they're both kosher at the same time, both tar at the same time, so too, on the same day, it's not right to switch off. And I think we mentioned a little bit in the previous time that lahalacha, we do basically take that view, that we think it's totally fine to switch from day to day, but we try to avoid doing it in the same day, in a, what we call a tarka d'sasra, in a contradictory way. We mentioned that the main time in which this is a challenge is Friday night, Friday afternoon, whatever you want to call it, Friday afternoon, Friday night. So then, the shuls, especially this time of year, So often we'll still try to, ideally the best thing to do is to schedule your early Friday night minyan around Prague, Mincha before Prague, Maariv after Prague, but probably a majority of shuls are not able to pull that off, not able to schedule things that way. So already the Rishonim discuss this, and the Rishonim say that the Tarta Desasre Friday night is justifiable because there is a overriding imperative of Tosefta Shabbos, that there's a mitzvah, probably a mitzvah in October, as we discussed earlier in the year, of starting Shabbos early. So therefore, it's justifiable to have the Tarta Desasre Rishonim already say like that. But ideally we won't do that, and ideally it's probably correct that that's viewed as the two coming at the same time. It's interesting to note that intellectually, if you think about it, so if we say it's legitimate to tell the two paths, tell guy A, tell Reuven that he's Tar, and tomorrow tell the other guy that he's Tar, so it's no bigger of a contradiction if they both come together. And if they both come together and say we erased each other, essentially the logic is still applies. So Tosus, if you look Tosus himself on Daf Yud, where this Mishnah is quoted, Tosus actually says really that's the Chumra the Rabbanan. Apparently, without getting into it, but they're apparently assuming that really logically it's no different. If you can contradict yourself from one day to the next, you can be just as consistent by contradicting yourself together. It seems like it's just a Siddin the Rabbanan that it's too blatant that we can't hold two opposing thoughts in our head at the same time. To have the two people come together and tell them they're both Tar looks bad, essentially. It's just a Din the Rabbanan, but probably, logically speaking, it's probably no different than telling them one day after another. So this whole type of the Tasrei idea is a mutual contradiction. So that's really a concern with the Rabbanan, and therefore we try to avoid it when possible. We don't want to ideally daven that way, but when there is a pressing need, like Tosefta Shabbos, so then that justifies it. It's interesting, we talked about a few months ago, we had a few shiurim here on Tosefta Shabbos. So Tosefta Shabbos is a fascinating topic in general, because it seems like there's a mitzvah in Torah to start Yontif early. Every single Yontif has this rule across the board, it's all the same, with a possible exception to the rule of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the first day of Sukkah, second day of Sukkah, Shmini Atzeres, first day of Pesach, last day of Pesach, first day of Shavuos, and Tisha B'Av. Basically, every Yontif has a quirk, essentially. There's some interesting discussion about every possible Yontif. Last day of Pesach, there's also a little bit of discussion, second day Yontif.
Not to confuse.
Yeah, so there's almost every Yontif, there's a shayla exactly how it applies. So Rosh Hashanah, there's also a view that it sounds like there's a view that some of the Rishonim are quoted, I mean, one of the Rishonim is quoted as possibly objecting to davening early Rosh Hashanah night.
So there's a lot of discussion.
So that's how it's quoted. Adam Ha'aril, there's a whole discussion whether he meant that or not, whether he accepted that opinion. Rav Yisfengel talks about it, Rav Yisfi Pesach Frank talks about it, Rav Harfinis has a tshuva about this in his Sefer Rosh Hashanah. He talks about whether or not there really is any reason not to daven early Rosh Hashanah night. So one idea he mentions is that maybe in general there is a whole concern of, let's say, Kriyat Shema early and the like, and other possible issues that maybe Yisrael Shema Tshuva we should be machmer, that even if all year round we're more mekel, that maybe Yisrael Shema Tshuva we should be machmer. So maybe that explains why Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Yisrael Shema Tshuva, so then we'll, according to this minority view, we'll wait until dark. But that's assuming that it's already Rosh Hashanah if you daven early. Maybe your Tosefta doesn't actually make it into Rosh Hashanah. There's a lot of sub-fakus in that question, but it's an interesting possible ramification of some of these issues. So essentially, so one difference between the Rosh and the Eri, which is what the Stipler was interested in, is this question of switching off between day to day. But another interesting ramification is how it affects our Tosefta. That Shagas Aryeh, as we mentioned before, Shagas Aryeh got all upset at Rabbeinu Tam. He said Rabbeinu Tam has no right to apply David Kamar Aviv to this din, because that's a din by davening. Davening is a suffix to Rabbanan. So suffix to Rabbanan, it could be Mekel. But Kriya Shema is a din in that Torah. What right does he have to apply this? So what emerges from the Stipler's analysis is that really there's a debate about what the principle means. That according to the Meiri, it comes out that it's a principle of Suffolk, yes. But according to the Rush, it's not about Suffolk, it's about Psak. So Psak is an issue in any area of Halacha, Din Daraisa, Din Darabanan, etc., etc. It could be a Din Daraisa, there's still a variety of positions within Psak. So perhaps that's the machlokis here as well, that the Shagas Arya is assuming that the whole din is about Safek. So he says, therefore it can only be applied to a Darabanan. We don't have the right to apply it to a Daraisa like Kriyashma. And if Rabbeinu Tam is doing that, so therefore he is assuming Kriyashma as Darabanan, that's against the consensus, not an acceptable view according to Shagas Arya. But according to the way that the Meir, that the Rush understands it, that it's about Psak, so then that could apply to a Din Daraisa as well. The Gemara is saying it's a Din Daraisa maybe, or could affect it in Daraisa, and you have the right to Paskim like either of you. So maybe Rabbeinu Tam understood that way, that it's about Kriyashma too, even though that's a Din Minatar, Kriyashma is Daraisa, yes. But the Gemara is saying you have the right to Paskim like either of you. And if you look at the commentary in the back of the Gemara called the Rabbi Yehuda Bacha, this is printed in the back of the Gemara, so he essentially explains it that way, that it's a question in Psak, and that's the way Rabbeinu Tam understands it, and therefore in theory it could be applied the same way to Kriyashma as to Tfila. So far so good? So there is, we'll just mention one or two other points, and then for next time we'll try to discuss some of the other issues within the Mishnah.
Rabbi Yehuda Bacha is late.
Can't be that late. There's printed in the Vilna Shas, so he's probably somewhere around the middle, I don't know exactly when he was, but he's printed here in the Gemara. So the mentioned two other points. One, the whole question of Tarta Desastre here, and why sometimes we tend towards a more lenient view. So Rav Nasan Gishtetner Zechon Levach was a great posik from Bnei Brak, passed away a few months ago, so he has a tshuva where he notes that it's not so clear that Tarta Desastre is really the right type of or Trei Kule Desastre Hadad, they say two leniencies that contradict each other. It's not clear that's really the case. You know, we tend to conflate the terms leniency and convenience. So we assume that since it makes our lives easier to have a Meir start earlier, Mincha go later, so therefore that's a Kula. So it's not clear that's really called Kula, because in halachic terms we're essentially saying there's a greater period of time when there's a chiyuv to do the mitzvah. So to obligate the mitzvah for a longer period of time is not necessarily a kula. A kula means you're either off the hook of an obligation or you're allowed to do something which is possibly awesome. But to say you have more time to fulfill a mitzvah, it makes our lives more convenient, doesn't necessarily define itself as a kula. So whether or not that intellectual problem of trei kulei the Sasra Hadadi is really the right terminology for having a more expansive period of time for Mincha Marav is itself an interesting question. And he also then goes on to discuss, you know, this question, if you take a view that this is about Psak, so how committed do you have to be to that Psak? You can change your mind, essentially, but you're not supposed to flip back and forth. Does that mean, what same does it mean to have to change your mind? So he talked about, in that Shuva, says that, as we'll discuss later on, so we know there is a major machlokus between the Rishonim, the Gaonim, Rabbeinu Tam, broadly speaking, as to when Tzeisa Kochavim is, when Shkia is, when you start, when you say today is Monday, and when you say today is Tuesday. So there's huge ramifications for all kinds of areas of halacha. But let's say somebody has his bris milah on a Tuesday, because he held that he was born a certain time of night when it was subject to the machlokus. And he took a stand, not he and his parents took a stand and decided that he was born on a Tuesday, his birth was on a Tuesday. Then he grows up, he decides, you know what, that actually his birth should have been a day later. That according to him, his birth was really on the seventh day, which is too early. You have to have it again. So is he mechuyev to have the birth again because he switched his view of the halach later on? So he comes out cool on this, but it's just a question, how far do you have to stick to the same view in terms of assuming that you're taking a stand one way or another as far as what the day is. There is a fascinating tshuva, and we'll end with this. In general, the Chajik Lover Rav, who was a student of the Avner Nezer, has fascinating tshuvas in general. He's just a tremendously creative thinker. So he discusses this idea of the Avid Kamar Avid, the Avid Kamar Avid, and he puts together two different views in a fascinating way. He quotes from the Ritzvah and Yevamis that even though one is supposed to follow, let's say, his own posek in terms of what view to take, or follow a consistent approach in terms of how to paskin halacha, is when you have the object itself upon which a different posek ruled leniently, you have the right to be lenient. So, for example, let's say there was an abstract question in Hilchos Kashrus. So then, you should follow your posek, even if he's a machmir, and other poskim are makir. So let's say you have the actual chicken itself, the actual chicken upon which a chacham was matir, a chacham said this chicken is mutter, so then you have a right to be makir, because it's as if the object has an inherent sack of heter, even though the shita abstractly you would have gone a different way. It's a very complex kind of idea. But he combines that with a statement you find in the Mishnah Melech, in the Rambam, in the beginning of Mishnah Torah. He says that the cycle of the earth, it's been going ever since Priyasa Olam, so that's the Shkia, it says all of that, it's the same Shkia and says that's been going since Priyasa Olam. So therefore, in this area of Halacha, about the Zman and the Yom, so it's as if we're dealing with the same Shkia, the same Plak HaMincha, as Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim were arguing about. So therefore, it's as if it's the same chicken from 1,000 years ago that was Paskim Lekula. So we have a greater right to flexibility in this area. It's a very creative type of idea than we would in other areas of Halacha. And that's what it means, Davar Kamar Avad, Davar Kamar Avad. That's why the Gemara applies it to there, because in more abstract questions, we have to just follow the view of whatever stream of Halacha we've accepted. But when you're dealing with the object itself, that was Paskim Lehetzel, you can be more makel. So that's the case with the Zmanim of the Yom. Zmanim of the Yom have been established and have been passed. A very creative, unusual idea.
He was always right before you, your
correct
particular day.
Right. So in terms of that, if they're the same cycle that Rabbi Chachamim just plugs you into the history of Halacha in a very fascinating way, where we have the same kula that was given then. Okay, so that will close that topic for today. So when we pick up next time, God willing, on Friday morning, we'll talk about the other issues in the Mishnah about the Gzeir of Chatzos, if there is a Gzeir of Chatzos, Shema in the middle of the night, etc., etc., and some of the ramifications of that, and then try to go on a little bit further into the Gemara and ultimately to this Chatzos and the later time issue in terms of Shema.